welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
So tonight we're going to pour one out for our recently departed Bill Paxton. With a movie that, as it turns out, isn't super Bill Paxton heavy. But our heart was in the right place. We're going to talk about 2000's U-571.
Indeed we are.
Brother Jay, I think this was ended up being your pick.
Yeah. kind of through deductive reductive conversation.
So, tell us about your relationship to this movie.
So this was a living by myself in Portland movie rental when it first came out. So I remember getting it from, at that time it was Hollywood Video, which was kind of a local Blockbuster type chain, but they were better priced and much better situated to where I lived. So this would have been a Friday night rental, going home and watching movies by myself. So
happy memories, sad memories?
No, they're good memories. And living by myself with a roommate who was an adulterer and a cretin, but yeah, it was fun.
Shout out to listener Jerry in yeah.
Actually, well, be careful, because
since you know someone named Jerry who's
who was a roommate.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sorry. So shout out to listener Rutger. Whatever. Anyway, so Brother Drew, do you have any history of this movie?
I saw it on video when it first came out and promptly forgot all about it. Which, as it turns out, is fair.
Uh-oh.
Well, I saw this movie for the first time 4 days ago. But,
wow.
But I do have a vivid memory of going to possibly see this movie. The year was 2000. And it was... I must have been, what, early 2000? Can you verify when it was released?
No, guess when it was released. It's a day very important to you.
April 21st.
Correct.
Oh, okay. So I was getting my snow tires taken off. The convention at the time, because I bought snow tires at Costco, was they would mount them and unmount them, or mount the summer tires and the winter tires, but you had to be there at probably about 5 o'clock in the morning to stand in line until they opened at 6, and then you got in line and got your appointment to get your tires changed. And for some reason, I had waited so long because it was, I guess, on the 21st. It was probably the week after that. It was probably like the 28th or something that I was getting my tires changed over, because you have to have them off by the 1st of May. So I went to Johnson's Tires at Old Seward and Diamond. It was probably about maybe 10:30 in the morning, something like that. And they said, oh, yeah, it's going to be 3 hours minimum. So I walked from Johnson Tire over to the Diamond Center theaters by myself, which is not unusual. I can walk by myself. What I had never done at that point was see a movie by myself, but I had 3 hours to kill. And it was my choice of the ones that are available. I remember I had whittled it down to two choices. One was U-571, and the other was Skulls. Now, turns out, on reflection, U-571 was probably the better movie, because Skulls was turned out to be rather lame. But I looked at the two movies and I thought, huh, U-571 is going to be a big old sausage fest. Ain't no chicks in submarine movies. So I thought there was a better chance. I don't know why that really would have played into it so much. But I went into the movie theater to watch Skulls, which I said was pretty forgettable, except for the fact that I was the only person in the theater.
Wow.
So much so that I was worried, because I was sitting toward the back, that maybe they wouldn't realize I was there and just not start the movie. But someone came in to check the temperature twice during that movie to make sure that I was comfortable. Because
no
one else was in the theater. It was surreal. That is the only movie I've seen by myself, but anyway, sorry. So that's, you know, it was a movie I didn't see, because I went to see Skulls instead, which is, like I said, pretty forgettable. But I'll just throw this out here. Even though, as it turns out, it has less Bill Paxton content than I thought it was going to be, I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, his role is important. He plays a good role. It's just unfortunate that, spoilers, he's killed off within the first quarter of the movie, so.
Yeah, he's definitely not the lead actor, even though he's the highest billed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he had a certain gravity. Also, he had a certain, you know, it was of a certain age where Mr. McConaughey was a lot younger in his career.
I felt really bad for Harvey Keitel.
Yes. Harvey Keitel looked to me a little bit like Charles Bronson in like the Great Escape type movies.
He reminded me a little of Bruno Kirby from Good Morning Vietnam?
That's an interesting line to draw.
It's just the appearance, the kind of physical appearance.
Well, it turns out the rest of the cast is actually pretty full of familiar faces.
Bon Jovi.
Well, I didn't recognize Bon Jovi, but turns out, yes. Mr. Pay It Forward himself.
Yeah, why was Bon Jovi in this movie? It's so weird.
Well, and we have David Keith from An Officer and a Gentleman, Firestarter, and Independence Day. We have Jack Weber from Medium and Dawn of the Dead, 2004. We have Smalls from The Sandlot. You're killing me, Smalls. Who played Trigger. We had Will Estes from Blue Bloods, The Dark Knight Rises, and he was Brandon Capwell in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
We had T.C. Carson as the token black dude, who is also, he has amazing amount of voice work, including he's Mace Windu in the Star Wars Clone Wars.
Very good.
Eric Palladino, who is straight off of ER. Dave Power plays Tank. He's in The Good German and Pee-wee's Big Holiday. We have Derek Cheatwood, who is in Frailty, and he was Max Giambetti in General Hospital. And then we have Matthew Settle from Gossip Girl as Ensign Larson. This was directed by Jonathan Mostow, who directed Terminator 3.
Oh.
So we have seen his work before. And I'm just going to sum up this movie in about 10 words. You can put this score with anything and make it a blockbuster movie.
You think?
The score of this movie was so bombastic, in a good way, that you could have put this score on...
You're going to use bombastic, really?
Yeah.
Bombastic, well,
okay,
really?
Yeah, that's okay. Sorry.
Mr. Pun.
Well... What can you do?
No, I know what you're saying, though. It was like a big, sweeping symphonic score that signified, I think, dramatic beats and dramatic moments that were not earned with the actual movie itself.
Yeah, it never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It rode waves, if you pardon that expression, of bombast through the whole movie.
It brought you a tide of emotions.
Swept you away.
It just kind of torpedoed your emotions.
No, don't look at me. I'm not playing.
You guys, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I tried the alley-oop there.
We're going to no and the entire...
Well, I tried. What do you mean, you guys?
No, you did.
There's only one guy.
You did.
Wait, yeah. when you were going to the cast, maybe I missed it. Did you mention Jack Noseworthy?
You know what? I think I skipped him, which is not a good thing. He played.
He was important. He was Wentz.
From Alive, Idle Hands, and the Bruce Willis movie Surrogates, also directed by Jonathan Mostow.
Oh, I haven't seen that. How was Surrogates? Have you, either of you seen it? Oh, okay.
I've seen it. I don't remember.
Was it decent?
Oh. No.
That's probably not a good endorsement.
No.
Yeah. So this is basically just a your standard thriller submarine movie.
Yeah. With some pretty authentic German.
I couldn't tell the difference, but it seemed okay. So I read a little bit people's criticism of this movie as being not historically accurate, but it's not a documentary.
No, it wasn't supposed to. It was kind of a collation of three different events.
Yeah.
So it was a dramatization of a series of captures. So
also fans of the German Navy were upset that the submarine crew, the German submarine crew, shot the survivors from the shipwreck. It was perpetuating a myth of the cruel German Navy.
So people saw a World War II submarine movie that had John Bon Jovi in it and came out of it complaining that it was historically inaccurate.
You're exactly right.
Come on now.
Well, I mean, Harvey Keitel almost looked directly to camera and said, "This is good coffee."
He'd broke it into song. Times like these are made for taster's choice.
I think at one point he actually had a conversation where he said, "Permission to speak freely, sir. We have to have this conversation so we can set up the arc of your character."
He also looked at, I'm trying to think, at certain points, he had a very De Niro-esque kind of look at him, too, so.
And did it seem like he was playing French?
That was just his mustache.
I guess, yeah. He was Mario, now with his wrench on the submarine.
But there are some pretty jarring scenes in this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the brutal cooking of all the mechanics in the engine room.
Yeah. Yep, the equivalent of Jason Voorhees, German sub-captain. He just kept coming back.
Yeah.
Okay, we needed some enthusiasm. Come on here, pick it up, guys.
Yeah, sorry. I thought this movie was incredibly formulaic, extremely boring, and utterly predictable. The only thing that was remotely shocking was how quickly they killed the crew of the first sub, especially Bill Paxton. Because that was like a good jump scare moment. That was like the only earned moment, I thought, in the whole movie. I mean, otherwise, you could draw a through line, right, from the first setup scenes all the way through the movie. I mean, you knew what had to happen. They didn't really take any chances. It was pretty standard. They had some nice like sweeping shots of the craft on the sea, but then they spent the rest of the movie on this tiny little set.
Well, you know, I think it was, I mean, it would have been maybe better as a 1979 TV movie blockbuster?
Maybe.
But I thought it was fun. It was totally predictable, I agree. Totally formulaic. But the score kept me from being bored. I was like, oh, there's something happening. Listen to the score. And I'm not even kidding. I mean, I think it really made a difference. Like, if you've seen those trailers of comedy movies cut as horror movies or vice versa, I mean, that's what the score did for this movie. If this movie had more of a mellow score, it would have been a total snooze fest.
I actually thought to myself, in the middle of this movie, I thought I would really rather be watching either Das Boot or Crimson Tide. One of those. That'd be better.
Yeah, I would agree that both of those are better movies, but I was entertained by this. I wasn't bored.
But Das Boot is a different kind of movie than this is. This is a feel-good German submarine movie. I mean, this is something you go to the theaters and you're like energized at the end of.
Yeah, and maybe I just wasn't in the right mood for this movie. Because I really wanted something I could sink my teeth into, and this was so light.
Yeah, this was a very, this was a diet movie.
It was a popcorn movie.
I'm not even going to give it that.
No, Bill Paxton made a lot of popcorn movies, as it turns out.
Maybe. That's pretty generous, though. Again, I like this movie, so... But it's I'm not gonna blow smoke and say it's a great movie. It was an okay movie.
Okay, was it better than Hunt for Red October?
I knew you were gonna ask that.
No.
If you had taken this score and put it on Hunt for Red October, would it have made Hunt for Red October a better movie? Okay,
but when Drew, when was the last time you saw Hunt for Red October?
I have seen it in the last 5 years.
Okay, because I have rewatched it and it's pretty formulaic too.
It was like in the first couple of like the first dozen or so movies, and it turns out it wasn't much to talk about because it didn't really hold up.
No,
I think the last time I watched it, what really caught me off guard on that movie was just how much Sean Connery was phoning it in.
Yeah, and how. Poorly cast Tim Curry was.
I mean, come on.
He was fine. I always liked Tim Curry, but
Him poorly cast. You're a bastard.
No, he wasn't. His character, he was in a different movie than everybody else was. He was comic relief in a movie that did not require comic relief.
Which is funny because I think that describes so many of Bill Paxton's characters.
Yeah, sometimes. Going through the list, yes, sometimes.
But not the case in this movie. Because he was pretty serious in this movie.
Yeah. So do we have anything really to say about U-571 before we go into the Bill Paxton Memoriam Edition?
No, I will give you Boyfriend Jesse's comment.
Please.
At the end of the movie. Well, it's a good thing Trigger died because he wouldn't have even fit on the raft.
Yeah, it seems like there was a lot of like yada yada on that raft.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're out in the middle of nowhere dressed as Nazis. We'll be fine.
Walk it off.
There was a lot of yada yada in this movie the whole time. I mean, it went from, you know, these aren't Marines. They've never seen action. Don't worry. I'll train them. It's like cut to infiltrating German sub.
Exactly.
Like, all right. Well, I guess they got trained at some point.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. The excuse was, well, the German sub guys aren't Marines either. Yeah, but you're going to be taking their sub away from them. They're going to want to keep it.
And they're German.
Exactly. Hey, they'll shoot a survivor.
That's right. It's funny, when I saw that scene where they're shooting survivors, I actually thought, I bet they had to add that scene in like towards the end of shooting because they realized that the German sub commander had so much charisma that people were going to naturally sympathize with him unless he did something really cruel like that.
Well, yeah, that is the thing. I mean, when you were looking at German, especially in this movie where except for the very first scene, the German U-boat shoots a destroyer or something or shoots some sort of ship and sinks it. But in CG, but yeah, otherwise the German guy, the German crew is actually pretty sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
They're stranded sitting ducks. They have to limp back with the current in order to have a supply ship come and give them enough supplies to fix their boat enough to bring it home. So yeah, you're right. They probably did have to add it. Otherwise it would look like really cruel for Matthew McConaughey to go and shoot these poor guys who are just out here, just like every other sailor.
Yep.
And the fact that the entire cast was wearing Nazi uniforms most of the movie.
That's fine.
Yeah, so they would not have been able to exhibit this movie in Germany.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, of course, there'd be, you know, the backlash of bad history. Although, again, I would think you would find it hard to quibble with, like, to take the German military side of World War II in any way.
Yeah.
Right. All the other side I have to say is, oh, hold on, you're saying the Nazis were portrayed unsensitively? Stop.
You don't say.
So, anything else on U-571? Possibly our shortest exploration of a movie? Although, I recommend it. I say, hey, if you've got almost 2 hours to kill and you're up for a submarine movie, you could do worse.
Do not spend any extra money on it.
I own it, so no extra money spent here. But it was budgeted for a whopping $62 million.
And how much did it make domestically?
$77
million. Yeah, so it just barely broke even.
Yeah.
Well, that explains why we never got a sequel.
Yeah, that's it. U-572.
That's right.
Now it's payback.
Oh, crap. We only got the first part of the Enigma machine.
Exactly.
Time to go back.
Boy, the IMDb user reviews are brutal.
Mm. See, that sounds unfair. It's not a bad movie. It's just...
The comment is, Mel Brooks does Das Boot.
That sounds great.
Exactly, yeah. Mel Brooks would have made it funny.
Yeah.
There would have been submarine puns, which I appreciate.
Wow. Yeah, no, if you want some entertainment, people, go read the IMDb reviews page on this.
We'll throw a couple at us while we're here.
Comments are, it's American military pornography. It's insulting all around. It's offensive and revisionist and should not have been made. It sinks with all hands, leaving an ugly, oily stain.
At least that's creative.
Please forgive us, British friends.
Well, okay, yeah, that is the big thing, because the first Enigma machine to be captured in a submarine sort of thing actually was most definitely a British crew. The Americans had nothing to do with it until, like, 1944.
John Bon Jovi was in this movie.
This movie was so bad, I was rooting for the Germans.
Oh, God. See, that's unfair. This was not a bad movie. It just wasn't good.
Yeah. Like I said, I think this is standard B-movie fare. Get a big tub of popcorn, American popcorn, with American fake butter.
I think one of the things that really bothered me about this movie is it had so much talent in it. Acting talent available to use, and it didn't. It didn't take any chances. I mean, you have Harvey Keitel and Matthew McConaughey and Bill Paxton. And fucking John Bon Jovi. And you don't take any chances. You don't let them do anything unexpected. It's like they made no acting choices in this movie. None of them.
That's because the director was so powerful. It was the Kubrick-like directing ability of Jonathan Mostow.
Yeah, that one guy who did that thing.
You're saying it should have been U-2001?
The monkey throws a bone and it turns into a submarine. I can see it happening. Ta 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 blah 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 blah.
This review, it's ID4 in a can.
No, it's not.
I love these. These are great. I love IMDb reviews now. They're saying it's Chinese food. 80 minutes later, I was hungry for another movie.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
a good one. Yeah. That's a good one.
Brother Jay, your verdict?
So, I give it a C. It's not a terrible movie. It's not a great movie, but I'm entertained by it. But I do apologize to those who will watch it and be disappointed. But fucking Bon Jovi.
So Bill Paxton Bon Jovi masterpiece.
Yes.
So Drew, is it worth it?
It is the best movie that I've ever seen John Bon Jovi in.
Is it the only movie you've ever seen him in?
No, I'm pretty sure I saw him in another movie called Moonlight or something.
Yeah, Dancing some sort of romantic comedy.
Yeah. He played a house painter or a handyman.
Of course he did. And I bet you on a steel horse he rode.
I knew you were going to bring up the Young Guns reference.
Oh, it was a Dead or Alive reference or Wanted or whatever that song's called.
Yes. That was Wanted, the theme song.
Wanted, Dead or Alive.
Oh, was that the theme song to Young Guns? Okay.
Wow.
No. You're referring to Young Guns 2,
okay,
and Blaze of Glory.
Ah, okay. All right. So, anyway.
Two totally different songs.
Yes. Although, again, you know, Bon Jovi is sort of the Casey and the Sunshine Band of hair bands. All the songs kind of sounded the same, right?
John Bon Jovi's been in a fair... His IMDb page is pretty damn long.
Yeah, but how many submarine movies has he been in?
Half of one.
What was that? What was the quote from Airplane? Like, so do you like Gladiator movies? No. Okay, anyway.
Crickets.
Sorry, that went over my head.
Been in a cockpit before?
No, sir, I've never been up in a plane before.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Do you want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it? Joey, you ever hang around the gymnasium?
We better get back now, Joey.
No, Joey can stay here for a while if you'd like.
Could I? Okay, if you don't get in the way.
Flight 209er to Denver Radio. Climbing to cruise at 42,000. We'll report again over Lincoln. Over and out.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
You are Kareem. I've seen you play. My dad's got season tickets.
I think you should go back to your seat now, Joey. Right, Clarence?
Oh, he's not bothering anyone. Let him stay here.
All right, but just remember, my name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't. Listen to you. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
Joey, you like movies about gladiators?
Okay, so shall we dive into the filmography of one Bill Paxton?
Sure.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, you asked a question. I thought you were looking for an answer.
One moment. So Bon Jovi was in the remake movie from the TV show Wild Wild West.
He was in the Will Smith Wild Wild West?
That's what it's saying. 1999.
Wait, he provided music for it, or he actually appeared as an actor?
It's hard to tell.
John Bon Jovi. Okay, forget all the soundtracks. What his... actor. Okay, here we go.
Actor. Oh, there's the tab. Gotcha.
West Wing. Oh, Cry Wolf. He was in 10 episodes of Ally McBeal, Pay It Forward.
He was in Young Guns 2.
Homegrown. Moonlight and Valentino as the painter.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's it. Excellent.
Did either of you take a look at the movies that we have covered on our podcast to see how many Bill Paxton movies we've talked about?
Not enough, that's for sure. We talked about him in Terminator.
Tombstone, yep.
Let's see. Is that it? No, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. It's pretty surprising we haven't we haven't tackled Aliens, we haven't tackled True Lies.
Apollo 13.
Frailty? Oh,
Apollo 13. Yeah, Frailty. If we had done another Halloween week last year, Frailty would have been on the list.
Yeah, it is on the list at some point, because Frailty is an awesome movie. Also, Near Dark. I'm a big fan of Near Dark. Adrian Pasdar, Lance Henriksen.
I've never seen it.
It's a certain thing, that's for sure.
I like both of those guys.
Oh, it's great. It's funny. It's a vampire movie. It's funny.
Oh, he's in Titanic. I've never seen that.
Titanic? You've never seen Titanic?
No. I know how it ends.
He was in Navy SEALs. Predator 2.
Twister. Oh, I've seen Twister. Yeah.
Boxing Helena. Titanic. A Simple Plan. That is a movie that has to be on the list, because A Simple Plan is a fantastic movie. That's the thing about Bill Paxton, is he, you know, in this movie he played like a dad figure, but in Frailty and A Simple Plan, well, no, probably Frailty he played a dad figure. He was a dad, but yeah, in A Simple Plan he's more like the older brother figure, although he's probably the younger brother in the movie. Actually, wasn't Billy Bob Thornton the older brother?
I don't remember. It's been so long.
You know, in Mighty Joe Young he was more of but like in Near Dark, he's like your baby brother. Tombstone's another kind of brother movie, obviously. And then, you know, he did some serious television.
Big Love,
yeah. And of course, Hatfields and McCoys, he got an Emmy nomination for playing Randolph McCoy. And he was the lead in Training Day that was getting some good reviews.
Oh, yeah, that's current, right?
Yeah. Season's not even over, I don't think. And he had a recurring role on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, Drew, I sent this to Jason on Facebook, but have you heard of the band Martini Ranch?
Oh, no? So terrible. Oh, God.
Bill Paxton and his friend Andrew Todd Rosenthal formed a new wave musical duo called Martini Ranch. They released one full-length album called Holy Cow in 1988 on Sire Records. And then the album was produced by Devo member Bob Caselli. And the music video for the band's single Reach was directed by none other than James Cameron. And
wow.
Yeah, I will embed the video on our website. The video Reach, which I think is a bit of 80s greatness, new wave at its best. And Brother Jay...
I apologize to all the listeners on your behalf.
I will play a little segment of it right now. He robbed a train near Santa Fe for money and for riches. It ended on a chain gang in them dirty striped britches. When the shadow of the night came on, he was gone. One day he bought himself a gun.
Terrible. It's not even great terrible. It's just terrible.
No, it's in the same vein as
it's,
like
it's not. It's just terrible. As like
was Spaz Attack by New Shoes?
No. Too New, by the way.
Too New, I'm sorry.
I was going to this party the other night, but I didn't want anybody to recognize me. I decided to change my name to Nardo. When I get there, this guy says, "Hey, I know somebody who looks just like you." I said, "Oh yeah? So do I. But I guess I'm just not myself today." All of a sudden, this fully beautiful, tightly wrapped Venus de Milo lookalike comes in. When she walks by, I say, "I think my imagination is starting to run wild." And she says, "I have the same problem with my cat." Soon as I heard her voice, my lips started to go ballistic. It could only be one thing.
Spaz Attack.
Watch out, baby, run for your life. It's coming on strong, sharp as a knife. Go
says her name is Helga, the pony woman. The first woman to ever say, two wrongs don't make a right, but three do. So I tell her my name is Nardo Polo, the greatest marble player who ever lived. That's when I get this incredible urge to speak the language of love with a Texas accent.
Boom, by the neck, you have a comatallic. Rock it off, a sugar baby, love me like you do. Love is a word, Nardo's a name. Ask me again, I'll tell you the same.
It was in that vein, I think. It was the 1988 equivalent of Detachable Penis. Or it was like, it was a stunt song.
Those are very different genres of...
It was Tom's Diner. It was that kind of thing. And not in the same genre, but in the same like category. It was alt before alt was alt.
You're building it up to more than it really is.
Did you see that Bill Paxton was originally cast as the lead in the movie Hardware?
Oh, no, but that makes sense.
Yeah, but the studio didn't know anything about them, so they wanted somebody who had a little bit more recognition.
Didn't know anything about Bill Paxton? So they chose Dermot Mulroney or Dylan McDermott? Who was in there?
Dylan McDermott.
Yeah. Wow. Hardware is another one that was really stylish.
They did not end up on the right side of history on that one.
No, they did not.
It had Iggy Pop in it. What do you expect?
Oh, no, Hardware was great. I saw Hardware in the theater. I own the soundtrack. I love that movie.
It had Lemmy in it.
It had everything. Although they did do one misstep. I'll just preview our Hardware episode. They did make the mistake of playing a fantastic Ministry song, but showing a video of Gwar. Because actually, it sounds about right, actually, if you look at the video and listen to the Ministry song.
This movie played at the movie theater when I worked there.
You got me in for free.
I know.
Me and Drew, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Loved that movie.
It made a killing compared to what it was budgeted.
Of course, horror movies always do. We all walk the wibbly wobbly walk.
Oh, God.
We all talk the wibbly wobbly talk.
Oh, we all wear wibbly wobbly ties. And we look at all the pretty girls with wibbly wobbly eyes.
Oy.
Very stylish movie. Soundtrack by Simon, what is his name? He's done a bunch of other movies like scores and soundtracks. Simon Branch, Simon Birch, Simon...
Simon Boswell?
Simon Boswell, yes. Yeah, Public Image Limited is on the soundtrack. Stigmata is the Ministry song, which is just fantastic. Ace of Spades from Motorhead. A couple of Iggy Pop songs. Ah, it's great.
Of course it was Ace of Spades.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Name any other Motorhead song.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think we're in danger of talking about Hardware more than we talk about U571.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So, okay. So, just a quick rundown of Bill Paxton filmography. So, Stripes. Let's see. Streets of Fire. The Terminator, Weird Science, Commando. We've got to watch Commando at some point. Aliens, Near
Dark.
I've
never seen Weird Science.
With Kelly LeBrock, don't hate her because she's beautiful. I'm not sure
never
it would be
seen it.
Because it's a comedy. I'm not sure it would be. It's going to hold up for our discussion, but I don't know. It'd be a nice trip back to 1985. Brain Dead. Navy SEALs, with I think both brothers Estevez. Predator 2. Trespass, which somehow I remember as being something interesting. Boxing Helena.
I think we saw that in the theater together.
Oh, maybe. Oh, was that the one with Kurt Russell?
No.
No. I'm thinking of... What am I thinking of? The one where he's a semi-driver? That was...
That's like Breakdown or something. Oh,
Breakdown. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Trespass was with Ice-T, right?
Ice-T, Ice Cube, and William Sadler.
Yeah.
Paxton and Sadler stars two firemen who decide to search an abandoned building for a hidden treasure, but wind up being targeted by a street gang.
Gangs. That was in the early 90s when, like, bad guys were just gangs.
Yeah. Indian Summer, Boxing Helena, Tombstone, True Lies, Frank and Jesse.
True Lies. He was so great in True Lies.
He was. You know, I haven't seen True Lies in a while, but I remember that movie being transcendent. I know you don't approve of Jamie Lee Curtis as a sex symbol. It's great. Apollo 13, which I have never seen.
Oh, Apollo 13's a great movie.
Well, to quote somebody I know the ending. Twister, which is incredible, but I remember being really fun in the theater. Another popcorn movie. Titanic, A Simple Plan, which if you haven't seen A Simple Plan, you're in for a treat. Mighty Joe Young, which I believe is that Charlize Theron or Naomi Watts? Charlize Theron, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Vertical Limit, Spy Kids 2 and Spy Kids 3. He directed Frailty. I had forgotten that. Edge of Tomorrow, Nightcrawler. I mean, he was making good stuff all the way to the end. I mean, he was 61, right? That's so young. Just tragic.
It feels younger every year.
It does. It does. So let's pour one out for another cinema hero, journeyman actor Bill Paxton.
What?
So I am basically the Michael Winslow of the Anderson Brothers.
That's very generous of you.
Don't sell yourself short.
Okay. Very nice. Hey, that's the sound of applause. That's what I'm hearing.
You would.
Hey, I have visions of or delusions of grandiosity. Friends, does this sound familiar?
You know, before we really met, I thought you hated me.
Or,
you always look vaguely disapproving even when you're smiling.
Your posture of disapproval may very well be a legitimate medical condition known as scoliosis. But there is hope, and it does not have to involve painful surgeries or inconvenient orthopedic braces. Let the certified clinicians at the Scoliosis Laser Treatment and Tattoo Removal Center help put a spring in your step and add a welcoming glow to the curvature of your spine. The SLTTRC operators are standing by to schedule your first consultation. Scoliosis. It's a problem with a solution. SLTTRC treatments have not been approved by the USA FDA, and you should always consult your doctor before starting any new treatment. So, can we talk about the Oscars before we go into housekeeping? Did you guys all see the Oscars?
No.
Yes.
Were you watching it when it happened?
No, I had recorded it, but I was unspoiled.
I watch events like that. The only time I'm ever on Twitter, which is why the Not in a Creepy Way Twitter handle only has like a dozen or so, maybe a couple dozen followers. Those people are very generous. If you haven't followed Not in a Creepy Way on Twitter, @not_creepy, please do. If nothing else, it legitimizes me when I try to engage actual people. When they look and say I have 12 followers, they're not impressed. They don't think I'm a real person. So I watch live
events. But one of your followers is Matt Whitecross.
Nope, not a follower. Just a commenter.
Oh, just yeah. A retweeter?
Not even a retweeter, no. Just a liker.
A liker. Yeah. A liker, okay. Yeah.
Well, I've had Jackie Cation like my tweets before too. I love her. In fact, her new album, which I think is called I'm Not the Hero, which is a line I steal from her all the time about not being the hero of the story, is available for pre-order now. So go get it. Jackie Cation. She's fantastic. She's the golden retriever of comedy. Everybody likes Jackie Cation. So I watch these live events to watch the tweets of people I admire. People like Guy Branum and Paul F. Tompkins and Laurie Kilmartin and, you know, a whole bunch of comedians who will tweet funny things. Patton Oswalt, who will tweet things, you know, during things like the Oscars. So I watched basically just a little bit of the middle where they brought that tour bus. You heard about that? Full of people, the Hollywood,
including Gary the rapist.
Yeah, exactly. Gary 3 days out of jail. I actually retweeted somebody who said, "Move over, Ken Bone. Gary, whatever his name is the new internet darling." That lasted all of 12 hours, but it wasn't until I came back from putting my daughter to bed to find out, seeing a thing on Twitter from Nikki Fink saying that that was the biggest like shit show ever. And regretting that now this is going to give Donald Trump something bad to tweet about Hollywood about. Which he did not. He showed restraint, which I think was pretty good. Or someone hit his phone. But, Jason, did you see the video of Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway?
No. Nope.
Okay. Do you know what happened?
Yes. Okay. I read it on CNN.
Yeah. So, Drew, do you feel sorry for Warren Beatty or... Or Faye Dunaway, or either of them? Because I kind of feel sorry for Warren Beatty.
I definitely don't feel sorry for Faye Dunaway.
Yeah, me either.
No way. I felt bad for Warren Beatty, because in the moment, he's the one that was taking all the heat. But, you know, going back and actually looking at what happened, he was the only one trying to be an adult in the room.
Yeah, he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, he knew something weird is going on, but I think people have been criticizing him for not saying something when she announced La La Land. But yeah, the thing that I thought about was he didn't know that they didn't win. He just knew that wasn't the right card.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So at that point, if he'd like stepped in and like tried to put a stop to it and been like, wait, and then it turned out they won anyway, then he would have ruined their moment.
Exactly.
So he was in a tough spot.
Yeah, yeah, and he did the right thing, I think. His official statement was, you know, it's not really my place to comment on this. The Academy will have their own comments.
So yeah, and PricewaterhouseCoopers is no longer working for the Academy. So
is it all of them, or is it just the two employees?
Yeah, I think it's just the two got taken off the account.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what. That's what the latest news was, that those two, and now they're, at first they only mentioned the guy's name, but it turns out they are both responsible. Like, they should have both instantly jumped up. Because I didn't realize how it works, is there's one on each side of the stage, and they both have sets of cards, of envelopes. So, you know, it just happened to be which stage entrance they were coming out on is who gives the card to the presenter. And apparently, Jimmy, who himself says he looks like Matt Damon on his social media accounts, was too busy Snapchatting and just handed the wrong card. I mean, that's the thing. Had they gone to the girl's side, she would have not handed him that card because she wouldn't have had it. Because she gave that one already to Matt Damon, who gave it to Emma Stone. I feel kind of sorry for Matt Damon, who didn't get to do the closing number with Jimmy Kimmel, whatever that was going to be.
Have you not heard what that was going to be?
No, huh?
Jimmy Kimmel was going to point out that Kenneth Lonergan won an Oscar for Manchester by the Sea and Casey Affleck won for Manchester by the Sea. And really the only person who didn't win for that movie was Matt Damon.
Ah, yeah. At a certain point, you just have to bail. And I love the fact that they brought Steve Harvey into it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a real moment, kind of fun.
The only category I was really invested in was the animated movie category, because it was the only one I had seen most of the nominees.
And were you rooting for Kubo?
I was.
Yeah, me too. But I think Zootopia was fine. I mean, it was a good movie. Had a good message.
It was good. Just came out so long ago. It doesn't feel like this year.
Yeah. And it wasn't as... I guess it was. I mean, they really did like create new technology for Zootopia. But looking at the scale of Kubo... Have you seen Kubo yet, Jason?
Nope.
It's really worth it. It's very interesting. Watch it and then watch the making of segment because it is it's just completely incredible.
Yeah, and it's a breathtakingly beautiful movie. And it has Matthew McConaughey in it.
And it's also it's a kid's movie that has some real darkness to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably was not age appropriate for my children.
Oh, I don't know though. I mean, never mind. I shouldn't bring us into this because, well, you get to read the book, the chapter of the book on movies too young to see. But, you know, lots of kids' stories have darkness in them. It's okay. Kids experience darkness.
All of the Brothers Grimm.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Oh, Hansel.
Yeah, I just don't know how to answer the question of why did his grandfather take his eye?
Again, not all people are nice. Stay out of the range of grandpa. It's always a good advice.
You see, he was walking behind the pool cue. You gotta look out.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so... Just a little bit of housekeeping. I kind of cut all of the car talk housekeeping last time. Jason is showing his Pepsi Cola bottle, which reminds him of getting hit in the eye with a pool cue. It's the taste of being smashed in the eye is also a taste of a new generation. So last week I cut out, through editing reasons, because we talked a lot about it that I didn't think was super necessary, but... I didn't, as far as continuity goes, I should announce to the podcast listeners that I have traded in my, the Expedition. The Expedition I bought from our father, and I've owned for 6 months. And now my wife has a brand new car to drive around, and I'm driving her old car. Which I think, actually, I didn't realize how much it probably stuns our father to this moment. Thinking about why we traded in the Expedition, which was new to us, and 1 year younger... instead of trading in the 1 year older Escape that we kept. But, and I think our mom still thinks that we waited until they were out of town before I traded it in. But nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, you did.
Well, no, I didn't wait. We waited until the moment our tax refund hit my wife's savings account. And she has squirreled some other money away. And so she called me or texted me saying, hey, our tax return's in the bank account, so we are going car shopping on Saturday. And as a good husband, I was like, yes, ma'am, that's what we're doing. And since the Expedition, although it was certainly fun to drive, it makes me feel like much more comfortable driving pretty much anything now, because it is the biggest thing I've driven, except for a rental U-Haul. Yeah, no, I paid a fair amount of money for the car, and then $2,000 and a fair amount of repairs for the car, and I'm going to do whatever I want with it. So, sorry, it has half the miles, or it had twice the miles of the Escape I'm driving now, so I think it works out. And we got a decent deal, so everybody should feel happy about it.
And does the Escape, the old Escape have air conditioning?
It does not, so it's even there. Although, I think I could probably fix the, or get it refilled or something, for cheaper than it would cost to try to repair the Expedition's air conditioning.
Oh, that's affirmative.
So there, we're in a two Escape family. My wife is still, it's funny. I think I talked about this, off the program, but I am not really a car person. Like I don't frankly care if as long as it runs, that makes a difference. Except that I'm really enjoying the new creature comforts, the electronic creature comforts of the new car, which I will, by the way, have never driven, probably will never drive, at least for the next 5 or 6 years. But I am a total, like, whenever I buy something, I totally get the buyer's remorse. Anytime I spend a bunch of money on something, Because I'm fine. I'm not good with saving money. I'm happy to spend money. But I always think, ah, if I buy a computer or buy a camera or buy a car or whatever, I was thinking, oh, I could have got a better deal. And this wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. And I'm noticing all these things that I could have probably done some more research and figured out before. And which is more into my psychosis than anything. But, or neurosis. But Kelly is not like that, my wife, and she loves this new car. The 2017 Ford Escape Titanium Edition that she got is the car of her dreams. She has had
nice.
She has had nothing but happy things to say about it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, good for you, Ford. You did right by us, and so far, knock on wood, everything works great. So, so high recommend. Now we're a two Escape family. Someday I'll get a newer car for myself, but again, not a big deal. And yeah, it's like moving from the Expedition, 2003 Expedition, to a 2002 Escape is like, it's in the wintertime at least, is like moving from a cross-country ski to a hockey skate as far as nimbleness. I can park it anywhere. I can do the roundabout backwards. Like, you know, with the Expedition, I had to like, you know, lead around the roundabouts like a little bit. Like I was driving a semi, because otherwise I'd be driving my back wheels over the curve because I'm so used to driving a smaller car. And for the first time in maybe 12 years, I can see the roof of my car when I'm walking up to it. As a man of fairly short stature, I don't see a lot of the roofs of SUVs, and I've never seen the top of a refrigerator. Apparently it's dusty.
Usually.
But maybe less so if you're tall and can see the dust.
Probably.
Any other housekeeping?
We have a request from our father for a movie to talk about on the podcast.
Okay.
Blue Ruin.
Blue Ruin? Is that the Blue Michelle Ruin. Williams movie? What am I thinking? Oh, Blue Valentine or something.
2013.
Blue Ruin. Yep. Okay. Well, we can put it on the calendar. What is it? What's it do? Is, do you have a synopsis there? Or not a synopsis, a tagline or something?
A mysterious outsider's quiet life is turned upside down when he returns to his childhood home to carry out an act of vengeance. Proving himself an amateur assassin, he winds up in a brutal fight to protect his estranged family.
Who is in this movie?
Released 9 July 2014 in France.
You're
budgeted for one budgeted for 1 million, it grossed 258,000.
Our father is recommending a French revenge film? Awesome.
Now, have you heard of the movie Green Room?
I've heard of it. I've heard it's really good.
Same director.
Ah, sweet. Excellent. Okay. Well, we need to shove it in the calendar.
Yeah, maybe we can program Blue Ruin in sometime around Father's Day.
People who liked Blue Ruin also liked It Follows, Murder Party, Green Room, The Witch, The Invitation, and The Babadook.
Thank you for saying The Witch. Because it is, like, the way the poster is called The Witch. Have you seen any of those movies, Jason?
No.
Well, It Follows and The Babadook are definitely interesting. The Babadook is a hard movie to watch. At least it was for me. Very tense. Have you seen it, Drew?
No.
Yeah. I recommend
don't watch
it.
A lot of horror movies anymore.
Well,
how did Dad sit through this movie? This is a bloody movie. How did he...
Now, that's what... Hey, that'll be what we're going to talk about.
Good God.
I think if I heard the story right, I think he rented it on vacation and didn't get through it before his rental ran out, so he had to re-rent it to finish it.
Which actually is a lot of commitment from Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, excellent. Okay. Anything else?
Maybe we'll bump Brokeback Mountain around Father's Day and fucking Blue Ruin. Although I really want to talk about Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, I've never seen it, so I'm interested to talk about it too.
I've never seen it either.
Oh, excellent. We like everybody in it. So, anything else, Drew?
No, I don't think so.
Brother Jay, any housekeeping?
A couple things. First thing, I will recount my story from a couple years ago when I went with one of my friends to see a movie to catch up with her. I hadn't seen her in a couple years. And she picked The 100-Foot Journey, which is a Helen Mirren movie about an Indian family of cooks. I don't know if you're familiar with the story.
No, I've heard a little bit about it.
No. But
not a great movie, but regardless. She and I went to an afternoon showing on the... I think it was a Saturday. I'm positive it was a Saturday. She and I were quite literally the only two beings in the theater. So that was just recounting the your story from earlier. We stretched out. We just kept expecting somebody to come in, or we expected them to come in and say, yeah, we're not going to run this film. We're going to just, we're going to save on the electricity rather than waste it.
Yeah, it's weird.
Having worked at a movie theater, we ran theaters that were empty, so...
Yeah, you probably are contractually obligated, right, in some cases to run the movie?
No. No. You pay for the print. You can do with it what you want. As long as the distributor gets his money, they don't care. As long as, you're not obscuring or redirecting the funds that would be allocated to the box office... For a ticket, as long as the distributor or the manufacturer's getting paid, they don't care. Sweet. You could play it or not play it. They're like, man, it doesn't matter to them. And then my other story is I've been having this... I returned my cable box three weeks ago.
Yes, yes.
So when I called a couple months ago, I contacted Comcast and said, hey, my friend just signed up for your service and... He is getting a rate which is half of what I'm paying, and he's actually getting better service than I'm getting. So what's the deal? And I said, well, he's on the new customer introductory rate for 18 months. And I said, I understand that. So I want the same thing. And they said, well, it's only for new customers, and it's only for 18 months. I said, I understand, but I can stop being a customer. And I can be a new customer. And they said, no, you can't do that. And so I said, well, okay, your cable service has gotten too expensive for me, so I'm going to dump that. So what do I need to do? And they said and told me I needed to bring the cable box back to the service center. And then once the service center received the box, then that would come off of my account and that would stop the charges for incurring. By the way, that was an entire and complete lie. So... Boyfriend Jesse and I take the cable box out of my TV cabinet, undo all the wiring, which, by the way, is not a small task because my entertainment cabinet has 9 different devices in it, and they're all cable run together in a tunnel cable system. So it's not like everything's just willy-nilly. So it was a fair bit of effort to take the cable box out.
Much like a submarine.
It was a commitment. I was definitely committed to returning the cable box. Return the cable box to the service center. Week goes by. Cable box is still showing active on my account. So I call customer service and they said, oh no, you would have to tell us you want to cancel your service. To which I said, I don't have the device. Wouldn't it be obvious when you get the device back that I wouldn't want the service?
Yeah.
I said, well, maybe we would have sent you out a new cable box. And I said, wouldn't it be obvious from my account that you didn't send a new cable box out? You don't keep records of such things?
No. What conversation do you think I had when I turned over the cable box?
So they said, here's a link, and you have to follow this web link, and then you have to say you want to downgrade your service, and somebody from customer service will contact you in a couple days. And because you requested it today, we'll end it on your account today, but we can't take the box off until the service center talks to you. So I filled out the web link, and nothing happens. So another week and a half goes by, and so I call last night or the night before and said, what's the deal? I just got my bill, and I'm still getting charged for cable box I don't have. And by the way, the bastards charge you for a month in advance. So I'm paying for next month for a cable box I don't have.
Nice.
So I said, what's the problem? They said, well, we haven't received your cable box. And I said, I turned it in to the service center. You physically have it. It's not in transit. It's not in the mail. You have the box. To which they figuratively threw up their hands. Oh, we don't know what's going on. And I said, well, you haven't taken it off my account. And they said, well, you haven't called to downgrade it. So I had to call the service center again. And they said, yeah, there's no such thing as a web link. We don't have a web link to downgrade service. And I said, I didn't imagine the URL. In fact, here's the URL. Here's the web page. I can show you that you gave me this web page. I didn't imagine it. It still exists, by the way. You can still go to the web page and look at it, and it discusses all the steps. So basically, the guy was trying to talk me out of getting rid of my service. And I said, I've already gotten rid of the service. I don't have the cable box. I physically don't have it. And he said, well, what can I do to restore your service? He's like, I don't want it. You weren't going to drop the price. And he said, well, I could drop your price to, and he quoted me some figure. And I said, that's $5 less a month than I was paying. I'm not interested in any way for the aggravation of going and getting a new cable box and installing it again for $5 a month discount. I said, I'm just not willing to pay that much money for it. I don't need the cable box. I've got other stuff to watch. I'm fine. So I had, at the time, cable service, internet service, and VoIP phone service with them, which was a package. So I removed the cable box from the package, and he quoted me a price. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. That's almost as much as I was paying with the cable. What changed? And they said, well, your $15 a month VoIP phone service went up to $60 a month when you dropped the package.
Perfect.
So the bundle of the cable, which was more than $45, tacks onto the phone service, which ends up being like $60. So I just said, take that off too then. I don't need that. And he said, well, but you you were using that. I'm like, you know what? I don't need to pay you $60 a month for a landline that I don't actually need. But between the three of us that live in the house, there's three cell phones. I think we'll make it work.
Yeah, for $60 a month, damn it, you'll make it work.
So, long story short, the customer retention guy was trying to bend over backwards to get me to sign. I'm not, you would have to cut the price in half. Well, I can't do that. I'm like, well, there you go. Then we're done. We're done here. But thanks for playing. Thanks for wasting my time. Thanks for lying to me three times, by the way, Comcast, you bastards. So, I'm down to just internet only with them. Which seems reasonable. I'm paying $90 a month for like 120 megabit service with a terabyte of data a month, which seems like a decent rate.
Yeah, better than we get.
And before the podcast started tonight, I ordered a VoIP module from Amazon, so I'll be installing my own VoIP module into my router. So that I have VoIP phone service, I have a Google Voice account, so I'll just set up my Google Voice as my landline, and I've got a UPS, so I've got landline phone coming, and so my fax service and my cordless phones will work fine, and I'll have a new phone number, and life goes on.
Sweet.
And the VoIP service is ostensibly free. Google Voice doesn't cost anything. The module is $70. It's a one-time purchase, and even if it's a $2 or $3 a month fee, it's still infinitely cheaper than $60 for a service that's arcane and wired.
Well, exactly.
So, just screw you, Comcast. I'm done. if I could find internet services that was as fast for my area, I would get rid of that too. But in the meantime, I'm happy with what we have.
Send your feedback to show at notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.